Well, have you seen them? They're literally all around, but sometimes they're so easy to miss. And maybe it's because they're literally all around that they're so easy to miss. But I don't doubt that you've seen them. Like even this morning, you've seen them. You've seen a number of them. You came from the west, literally 100-some feet out from the church. There's one there. It's a yellow diamond, has the word church on it. If you came from the east by Woodbrook Elementary, tons of them there. If you go into the kitchen, they're there as well. A lot of them on the fire extinguishers. If you use the restroom after someone has mopped it, probably one there. Hopefully not, but there might be one on your car dashboard. They are all over, including in our text. There are a number of them in our text, and we want to explore these warnings in our text this morning. Our text is found in Luke 11. Stan just read. 894 is in the Pew Bible, if you want to follow along. But we're going to tease out these different six warnings, and the text begins with a series of these warnings, which are really more of laments from Jesus. The idea behind this idea of woe is not so much vindictiveness, but rather the idea of grief, of lament, of woe. And it's targeted toward this group called the Pharisees. Now, their name Pharisee actually means the separated ones. There's about 6,000 of them at the time. They're teachers in the synagogue. They're religious examples. They are self-appointed guardians of the law and its proper observance. They are zealous for the law. They really care about the Bible, we might say. Jesus picks up on this, actually. And whereas we might just automatically throw them under the bus if you grew up in church, oh, Pharisees, Jesus says this about them in Matthew's gospel. I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven. So they're very zealous for the law. Their zeal, however, as we'll see today, sometimes is not so well directed, but there is a zeal there. They really want to be separate. They want to be holy. They want to obey God's law. And before we look at some of these woes, I wonder if you had, like me, kind of the sense of almost deja vu. Like as the text begins, it feels rather familiar. Jesus is invited by a Pharisee to have a meal with him. So he goes in and has reclines at the table. But the Pharisee was surprised when he noticed that Jesus did not first wash before the meal. And there's this whole conversation that follows. At least in my mind, that rings a bell. That reminds me of Luke chapter 7 that we looked at a few weeks ago. When one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him, he went to the Pharisee's house and reclined at table. It's the same almost picture. Jesus invited by a Pharisee to have a meal with the Pharisee. Now, you might remember in Luke 7, what happens next is this woman comes in with a rather checkered past and starts washing Jesus' feet with her tears. Back in Luke 7, when the Pharisee who invited him saw this, he said to himself, so he thinks to himself, oh, if this man were a prophet, he would know who is touching him, what kind of woman she is that sees a sinner. Jesus answered him, Simon, I have something to tell you. Tell me, teacher, he said. And then do you remember what happens next? Jesus put Simon in his place. And so in light of that, if you remember Luke 7 and what follows that initial kind of foray into that situation, something very similar happens in our text this morning. So Jesus indicts the Pharisees for their illogical thinking. They wash the outside, but not the inside. And then this lament, these woes begin with this. Woe to you Pharisees, because you give God a tenth of your mint, rue, and all other kind of garden herbs, but you neglect justice and the love of God. You should have practiced the latter without leaving the former undone. Now he's talking about tithing, which is not a bad thing. God calls his people to tithe in the Old Testament. So he's not against that. In fact, the text ends. Jesus says, you should have practiced the latter. Like that's not the problem that you're tithing. The problem, Jesus says, is you missed the point. You tithe to the very smallest little herb, but you missed the bigger picture. You missed justice and the love of God. You've missed the important things. And let's be honest, we're sometimes the same way. We're focused on the small thing, but we neglect the large thing. You pay your taxes, no problem, but you don't spend time with your kids. You come on church on Sunday, which is a good thing, but you don't honor him during the week. In short, you honor him with your lips, but not with your lives. You focus on the small things, which are important, but you miss the big picture. He continues, woe to you, Pharisees, because you love the most important seats in the synagogues and respectful greetings in the marketplaces. This reminds us of that first indictment, that opening text that we didn't specifically look at. They're so concerned with the outside, right? Remember, we just saw this in Luke 11:39.
You Pharisees clean the outside of the cup and the dish, but inside are full of greed and wickedness. And congruent with that, the second woe is that. You care about the outside. You care about what people think about you. We're the same way. How often are we preoccupied with the outside, with our looks, how you look on a Sunday, how you look and appear on social? You care what people think, but we don't care what God thinks. We miss the point. Third one, woe to you because you are like unmarked graves, which people walk over without knowing it. And so contextually, remember, in this context, if you were to walk on an unmarked grave or a grave of any sort, you'd have contact with the dead and therefore be ceremonial unclean. And so he's likening the Pharisees to that. You're like these unmarked graves. People don't even know, but when they have contact with you, instead of helping them, you're hurting them. Perhaps we're the same as well. We try to influence others. We think for help, but we're actually hurting them. For example, have you ever had a conversation with a friend, maybe even a well-meaning friend, and you share something burdensome with them, but all of a sudden, instead of caring about you, they start flexing on themselves. Oh, your friend comes and says, oh, I've had this horrible cold for so many weeks. I can't get rid of it. And then the other person says, oh, I had a cold like that once. And they go on and on about, oh, it was horrible. I couldn't sleep and just was so tired. But you know what? You should go outside and get some fresh air. Then you'll be fine. Worked for me. Like, it's kind of subtly turn everything on themselves. Then the text takes a little bit of a turn here. It's probably my favorite verse. One of the experts in the law answered them, teacher, when you say these things, you insult us also. Now, these teachers of the law, many of them are Pharisees. They are, as you can probably discern, people who studied the law, interpreted the law, taught the law. So very similar to the Pharisees. Now, how do you think Jesus will respond? If he hadn't read verse 46, is Jesus going to be like, oh, did I insult you? I'm so sorry. Come here, bring it in. I'm sorry. Jesus, in a moment of what I call sanctified spiciness, just keeps going. Okay, experts in the law, woe to you, because you load people down with burdens they can hardly carry, and you yourselves will not lift one finger to help them. We're the same way. We may hurt other people when we live a life like, do as I say, not as I do. That's what they were doing, adding rules to the law, making it hard and burdensome for people. Doing nothing to help them, but yet themselves finding ways to circumvent the law for themselves. I think of, for example, a parent who says to his teenager, get off your phone, you're on your phone too much. And the son says, but dad, you're on your phone all the time. Doesn't matter, don't talk to me. Do as I say, not as I do. Woe to you, because you build tombs for the prophets, and it was your ancestors who killed them. You testify that you approve of what your ancestors did. They killed the prophets, and you build the tombs. And it continues on there. But the idea is, again, they hurt other people. They literally hurt the prophets. They were complicit. They were guilty with the former generations. And finally, woe to you, experts in the law. You have taken away the key to knowledge. You yourselves have not entered, and you have hindered those who were entering. Instead of teaching the law, teaching what the word of God means, they're obscuring the meaning. You're supposed to help, but they're hurting. Just pause here. My response to these woes is simply, whoa. Like these feel weighty. These feel heavy. These feel deep and strong. Why? Why is Jesus so adamant about this? Woe after woe after woe, six in total. Well, these Pharisees, these teachers in the law, were meant to honor God and build up the people. But those are the two, they're not honoring God. They're not about God. They're not about people. They're about themselves. They're self-centered, they're self-justifying, trying to make themselves right because of their own works. And indeed, look at the second section here. This kind of self-centeredness comes out in their response. When Jesus went outside, the Pharisees and the teachers of the law began to oppose him fiercely and to besiege him with questions, waiting to catch him in something he might say. You might hope that the Pharisees, teachers of the law, after getting called out pretty directly by Jesus six times, would be like, wow, he's right. We should really reflect on this and think carefully about this. But what do? They just put up their defensive walls. And that's a good word for us. When you are most defensive, take note, because that's likely the sin that you most love, the sin that you most never want to get rid of. So when you feel like your defensive walls get up, your blood pressure rise, your face get flushed, pause. Think, what is it? Why am I so defensive? Because that's probably an error that you need to look at and take notice of. The text concludes with teaching, and Jesus says this in verse 1. Meanwhile, when a crowd of many thousands had gathered so that they were trampling on one another, Jesus began to speak first to his disciples, saying, "Be on your guard against the yeast of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy." So he kind of bounces off the Pharisees, uses them as an example, and then launches into teaching for his disciples based on them. Now, the teaching of Jesus here is not just for those, the first century disciples, but also for us as well. So three ideas as we kind of think about how we can live this out. First is, hey, look out. The text literally begins as Jesus begins speaking in chapter 12, verse 1, with this phrase, "Be on your guard." We might say, look out, watch out. Why? Why does Jesus begin like this in response to the Pharisees? Because the one thing that kept killing them was that they were not aware. They didn't even know what's going on here. And so as a result, the first thing is look out, be alert, be aware of what's going on here, because the Pharisees weren't. Now, if you know me, if you've been here at all, you know I get lost a lot. There was the time driving my friend to the airport in Chicago, dropped him off at O'Hare. Mission accomplished. Going back to the campus, I see a sign, Michigan, this way. I don't live in Michigan. I live in Chicago. But I realized I was lost because of the sign. Many years later, more recently, also driving to this conference in called MCCA. It's in Ohio. I had, at that time, been there literally 20-plus times. You just go east. It's pretty simple. I went west, and so I had an inkling that I was going wrong when one of my children, who at the time was not driving but yet was cogent, asked, "Are we lost?" "Yes, we are, son." Realized I was lost. However, as bad as it is to be me and to have such be so challenged directionally, what is worse than being lost? Not knowing you're lost. Because then you're never going to, why would I want to find out where I'm going? Because I'm not lost. There are few things worse than being lost and not knowing you're lost. Not being aware, not realizing. There's great power in that surprise. The worst thing is to not know that you don't know. And that seems to be where the Pharisees are at. They don't know that they don't know. Therefore, Jesus launches into the teaching to the disciples saying, hey, be on guard. Be aware. And it's particularly difficult to know because did you notice the imagery that Jesus uses for the influence of the Pharisees? Yeast. Now, yeast is, you know, used in bread. It's slow and it's unseen, but it helps the bread grow. But the negative example of yeast in terms of the Pharisees' influence, the bad example, one author says it's slow, it's insidious, it's constant, and I would say it's covert. So how much more then? You've got to be aware, you've got to be alert, you've got to be on guard, because the yeast of the Pharisees, their negative influence is so slow, it's so subtle, it's so covert, that left to your own vices, you're just never going to. John Bunyan was a 17th century pastor, and he wrote a number of works, the most famous being Pilgrim's Progress, but another work was called Grace Abounding. And in this work, he pictures Satan not as a raging dragon, but rather as a snake, patient and calculating. He pictures Satan saying this, "I will cool you insensibly, by degrees, by little and little. What care I, though I be 7 years in chilling your heart, if I can do it at last? Continual rocking will lull a crying child asleep. I will ply it close, but I will have my end accomplished." Did you understand what he was saying there? Satan's strategy is, hey, you might win the battle, but I want to win the war. He's patient. An author commenting on that quote from Bunyan says this, "The devil uses many weapons in his assault against our soul, but one of the most overlooked is simply time. And spiritual health yesterday does not guarantee spiritual health today." So look out, be alert, be aware of this. Fight to see, because our natural inclination is not to see these things, to ignore those things, to sweep it under the rug. Look out. Second, look in. Look in the mirror. Ask yourself the simple question. The language Jesus uses is hypocrite. Am I a hypocrite? How am I a hypocrite? So, for example, some of you are rule followers. in everything, including punctuation. And so you're probably part of the, and this is a real thing, the Apostrophe Protection Society, whose mission on their websites is this. Since 2001, the Apostrophe Protection Society has had a mission to preserve the correct use of this important, though much misused, item of punctuation, namely an apostrophe. I'm going to show you some examples on their website. For some of you, this will be very hard to see. But just notice your soul and see where it goes. Teachers needed. See on the right? Tomatoes, $5 a basket. And finally, the worst for last. Ice creams, crepes, waffles, milkshakes, sundaes. Okay, that's enough. Some of you can calm down now. Some of you are just like, no. Now, if you're not sure what was wrong there, but for some of you, you care more about a bad apostrophe than your own soul being in spiritual apathy. Like, following rules is not following Jesus. Again, it's not a bad thing. It's good to have great punctuation and grammar, etc. Remember the tithing. It's good to tithe, but don't neglect the larger issue. Just because you follow rules doesn't mean you're following Jesus. Now, for others, again, I recognize apostrophes may not be a thing for you, but for others of you, it's punctuation in another sense, punctuation of time. Like when the meeting says it starts, you start. When it ends, it ends. And woe unto you if you come in late or if you leave early. Like that's your vibe, that's your deal. For others of you, it's polite, being polite. You have a sense of decorum, of courtesy. You want to be kutchy in everything. So outwardly, it looks so nice, but inwardly, not so much. What is it for you? Like, where are your hypocritical zeal growing for you? It's probably different for all of us, but where is it for you? Where is God convicting you even this morning? And remember, if you feel convicted, that is such a good thing. Because remember the first one, look out. The worst thing is to not know that you don't know. So if right now you're starting to know where you're hypocritical, that is a gift. That is a gift from God. Because you can't address that which you don't know. Finally, so look out, like watch out. Look in, where am I hypocrite? And finally, look up to the Lord. It is exhausting to be a hypocrite. It is exhausting because you have to live two lives. It's like double lives. You have to have your one life in which you present to the world. You have to perform. You have to be like this or that. But internally, you have your other life. It's exhausting because you're out of alignment. I mean, imagine if your car, your front wheels are going this way, your back wheels are going that way. You would go, but it's going to be horrible wear and tear on your tires. It's exhausting to be a hypocrite. And so God invites us to shalom. God invites us to peace. God invites us to this wholeness, and he provides a way. Because Jesus' body was broken so that you can be whole. God indicts our sin, clearly. Jesus indicts the woe here, but he also provides forgiveness at the cross. He provides his spirit to give you this new life, to live a whole life. I was thinking of Romans 6. We know that our old self was crucified with him so that the body ruled by sin might be done away with, that we should no longer be slaves to sin. Elsewhere, Paul will talk about the old is gone, the new has come. Let's live in that new identity that we have in Jesus. And so maybe your prayer needs to be something like this. Lord, I don't want to be a hypocrite. I don't want to be inauthentic. I want to be authentic. I don't want to compartmentalize my life. I want to be whole and holistic. Help me to live into the new creation that I am in Christ, one who repents and believes consistently. One last thought. A little warning about these warnings.